Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 34 of Game On with Cody and John.
On this episode's Big Deal,
obligatory holiday episode 2009,
we'll bring you the uncommon gift guide for the common gamer.
And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny,
Castle Panic.
Will you be the king of the castle, or will you run away panicked?
All of this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, and role-playing games. Coming to you from the beautiful city of Indianapolis, Indiana.
Cold.
It's real cold
and this
outside.
Supersedes the cold. So, I mean, we got our first snow of the year. The city about shut down. And
Yeah. I had to take my mom to the airport the day that we had got snow a few days ago. And usually 10 minutes to get to my mom's house, an hour and 10 minutes.
Ridiculous. Crazy. But in better news, the Colts are on their way to being 13-0 after we dispatched the other horse team,
absolutely,
weekend, the Broncos.
Yeah, so good news for the Colts, and good news for you guys, because when the Colts win, we're in a much better mood.
That's right.
And so, all right, we have a much cheerier podcast, and lots of other reasons to be cheery this episode, because, hey, it's Christmas time.
It is.
Heading towards the holidays there, whatever holidays you may happen to celebrate. I'm kind of a Festivus man, too, in addition to being a Christmas guy.
Very good.
But we're going to be giving you the uncommon gift guide for the common gamer.
That's right.
Now, there's lots of other podcasts that do gift guides, but we're going to give you a little... We're going to give you the Cody and John way of doing
That's
the
right.
gift guide, so
That's
just
right.
stay tuned for that. And what do we got in our Buy, Try, or Deny?
We've got Castle Panic. It's a new semi-cooperative game.
Yeah, pseudo-cooperative.
Pseudo-cooperative. Prefix cooperative.
Right.
We're going to review that, and if you pay attention here in the Game On Inbox coming up, we've got a great deal that's coming out for this holiday season.
Big announcement.
Big announcement. So, your game collection could grow tenfold, or it might, tenfold, depends on how many you have now, I guess.
There's a chance for you to add a ton of new games to your collection. So.
That's the best way to put it.
And hey, that's coming up in the Game On Inbox, which starts...
immediately.
The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it.
All right, well, it's time for the Game On Inbox, and before we get too in-depth on the emails, we do have a due penance to the man. Or,
oh, yes.
I always say penance.
Like, I'm sorry, Dan. Like, Father Dan.
That's right. Our due diligence to the man, and that is our great sponsor at Myriad Games, and John has some seasonal benefits of Myriad Games and not-so-seasonal benefits that he's going to tell you about.
That's right. Well, we want to start off by saying that Myriad Games proudly sponsors Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. So if you happen to have a friendly professional game store near you, we would encourage you to go and check it out. And if you don't, please go check out myriadgames.com. And one of the things that Myriad wants to tell you, and we want to tell you too, is that games make great gifts.
Absolutely.
And this is the time to be giving, and this is the time to be giving games to those who are gamers in your life, and also people who maybe aren't gamers, but could be.
I would say especially.
Yeah, this is the time to get folks into the hobby. So, you know, be sure to go and visit your friendly professional game store, buy games for gifts, and if, you know, go check out myriadgames.com where they offer free gift wrapping. We mentioned that last episode. It's a real nice little benefit.
Yeah.
I have actually spent the last week wrapping presents for my kids and my family to put under the tree. And I used to be real good at it. I'm not so good anymore. And I wish that the elves at Myriad Games were at my house to wrap my Christmas
They do
presents.
Have a bump to Dex.
Very nice.
Thank you.
So games do make great gifts. So be sure to check those out and check out myriadgames.com. Also, Myriad Games... it also does podcasts, just like we do. They're called Myriad Games Presentations. We'd encourage you to go and check them out. You can check them out on iTunes, or also they've got the feed at myriadgames.com. They have put together a really nice, extensive gift guide about all kinds of games, and so we would encourage you to go check that out as well. You know, check out our gift guide, which is coming up a little bit later in this episode. But
once you're done
with that, go check out Myriad Games Presentations. Now, one last thing we want to mention about Myriad Games before we move on is that they do have this really cool program called the MVP membership. And this is something that if you live in New Hampshire and you can go to Myriad Games as your local game store, this is even an even better deal because they have a lot of things, the in-store things that would be good for you. But if you're someone who has a kind of a monthly game budget, you know, 25, 50, 100 bucks, whatever, and you know that you're going to be spending that much money every month, why not put it into a Myriad MVP membership where you can get some bonuses to go along with that? So one of the things that comes along with it is that you get what's called bonus Myriad money. So each month, if you spend at least $50 in Myriad money or $50, you'll receive $5 in a bonus Myriad money added to your account. So it seems like that kind of amounts to what, like a 10% discount, yeah. Right? I don't know. Hey,
it adds up quick.
Yeah. And so they also have things called Myriad Games Open Play. So if you happen to be there in the store, they have a whole catalog of latest and greatest games that are in their selection. You can go in there and just try them out for free. That's pretty cool. There's Myriad Games gear. I mean, who wouldn't want, you know, a Myriad Games t-shirt or a coffee mug or, you know, whatever other things they have with Myriad's logo on them?
Maybe.
I know. We
might be reaching.
Oh, you're right. That's one of the things you can do too. They also do an automatic free games drawing each month. And if you are an MVP member, you're going to get an entry into that drawing. So potential to get free games. You can get a free subscription to a Game Trade magazine. I don't know all the specific details about that, but you can check with Myriad Games for that one. And also at the platinum level, which is $100 a month, this is good for folks that don't live in New Hampshire. You can get free shipping, one shipment per month for free, wow. Which that can be pretty good, especially if you're spending $100 anyway. That could be substantial shipping. So lots of other things too. So we'd invite you to just go check out MyriadGames.com and look for the MVP membership button. So there you go.
All right.
Let's move on to games we've been playing, right?
Yeah. I'll start us off. Okay. Last night I had normal kind of RPG Friday night group is on a winter break, you know, as we get through Christmas and through the holiday season, scheduling is kind of tough. So we've just been doing board games, and I got introduced to a few new ones last night, including I believe it's a German game. Well, I mean, it's Milton Bradley, but the version that one of the players brought was a German version. It's called Lupin Louie. And it's this kid's game. Apparently it's popular on the Geek, and I'm just now hearing of it, which is how it usually goes. But it's just this kind of dexterity-based game with it has a battery-operated... it's like a bird in a biplane, and he's trying to knock your chickens off your roof. And you're just trying to bounce them to where...
That makes perfect sense.
It sounds really stupid.
Good theme.
and when the box came out and he started unpacking, I'm like, he brought a freaking kid's game, you know? But we played it like 8 or 9 times. It was one of the greatest games I've ever played.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were just playing and playing and playing. It was a lot of fun, and it was just a nice light game. And, of course, it's out of print, and it's, you know, hundreds of dollars to get. So
yeah, I hear that it comes into print every once in a while at, like, some of the online retailers. Mm. And so, you know, you can pick it up for... a pretty good price there. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but sure. But yeah, if you wanted to go on like eBay or something, get a version, it might be a lot more. Yeah. So
we played that. I also taught Dominion, uh-huh. And I tried a new tactic. I tried the cash only mechanic, where you just buy.
This is my suggestion. Right?
This was your suggestion, so I tried it out, and it worked. It's a little slow, and I barely won, but it did work. And I was playing against two new players. So.
It's definitely not the most fun way to play.
It's not the sexy way to do it. But
I'll buy a silver. Buy another silver. I'll buy a gold.
And then finally, I played Citadels. It's a great game for, I want to say, 2 to 7 or maybe 2 to 8.
Yeah, I think it plays up to 7.
Yeah, and it was. I played that game quite a lot in the past, and I hadn't played it much since, but it was just a blast, and I had a lot of fun. So that one's definitely going to hit the table more.
It's a little detailed about that one. It's in the Silver Line series for Fantasy Flight Games, so you absolutely can check that out if you're wanting to take a look at that one.
And I know John's going to mention some games we both played, as well as games he just played.
Okay. Well, yeah, big long list, actually, because I think we were able to get a couple of game nights in the span of time.
This was a nice... run a couple weeks here.
Yeah. And so one of the games that I've had in my collection for a long time that I have not wanted to enact the Richard postulate on, like, I haven't played this game. I've had it for more than a year without playing it, but I didn't want to get rid of it. So I figured I got to get it at the table so the clock can start ticking on it. Right. So, and that's the game Colosseum, which is a Days of Wonder game designed by Wolfgang Kramer and one other guy, but,
okay.
And I can't remember his name, but this is a game about building your Colosseum in Rome and putting on events, different kinds of gladiator events and dramas and that kind of stuff, all the kind of things that would be typical in a Colosseum environment in Rome. And each of these different events has a certain number of, what do they call it, resource tokens, basically, that you're trying to collect. It might be singers or gladiators or lions or horses, things like that. And you have to collect certain numbers of things. And so you're also trying to attract in the different nobles that are walking around the board. You've got senators and consuls and things like that. And so you'll get bonuses for those. So you're going to be... There's a phase that involves trading where you're trying to get these resource tokens, and then you're buying certain things to upgrade your Colosseum. And then at the very end of each turn, you put on your event, and based upon how many of the resource tokens you have, you're going to get a certain number of spectators. And it's those number of spectators that will determine your score. One of the interesting things I think about the scoring is the fact that it's not a cumulative scoring. So you get 20 spectators for your first event, then you go around to the next turn, and let's say you get 25. Well, you don't add that 25 to the 20. 25 becomes your new score.
Right. It takes your best score that you got.
So it's always going to be the best of what you can do. So by the time you get to the fifth round, you might have bought this very, very complicated event, and you need a huge expanded Colosseum to do that. But the game is pretty interactive, although you kind of can plan your own strategy of what you want to do. The main interaction is that you're competing for these different tiles, and you're trading with other players to get the ones that you want. But I thought it played really quickly, and the bits and the components of the game are really, really nice.
Oh, yeah.
Typical Days of Wonder, high-quality components. And so this one is staying in the collection. I mean,
good call.
Yeah, and I don't know where this fits in the Jones theory, but it's... It's the only Colosseum game that I own, so I'm putting it in that category.
Yeah, it was the game was not at all what I thought it would be like, but it was still a lot of fun, and it's one that I know Kalen really liked it, and I think it's one that's definitely going to stay in our collection. And as an aside, we want a big thanks to listener Chris Hahn.
Oh, yeah.
He's a local listener. He stopped by the Jones Estate, and we all played, and we had a good time. So
yeah, we had a great time with Chris. I think he goes by Hanorama on the BoardGameGeek, and so we had a great time talking with him, and he had just a great time. We hope that we'll get a chance to game with him sometime in the near future.
Okay,
so other stuff that I've been playing, I got a little card game from Out of the Box Games called Run Wild, which is part of this new line of games they have. I guess it's not necessarily new, but it's in the line of games that are in small metal boxes and little tins that you can carry these cards in. And Run Wild is a game of, it's like a rummy-style game, but it's a speed rummy game. So instead of taking turns and collecting cards and laying down sets and runs of cards, it's all done simultaneously. Everybody has their own deck of cards, little deck, and has 8 cards, and the goal is to get rid of your 8 cards as fast as you can by playing runs and sets to the table, and also by playing on other people's runs and sets. So it's very chaotic, and it goes real fast, and I think one round of it probably takes 5 minutes, if that, maybe less. And then you play 3 rounds, and whoever has the fewest number of total cards left over in their hand ends up being the winner. So I thought this one was a lot of fun and real quick, and it's at a real nice price point. I believe it retails for $9.95, and so that's pretty good for a little card game that you can carry anywhere with you. So that was a good one. And then we also went to a birthday party. Cody and Kalen and I went to our friend Matt Sweatnam's birthday party. Happy birthday, Matt.
Happy birthday.
And we had a great time playing some games there. We got to got in a game of the Adventurers. Lots of death in that
victory.
Game.
Victory.
Victory for Cody. And so for a birthday gift, I brought Matt a copy of the new expansion, or sequel, I guess, to Asmodee Games. We didn't play test this at all, which we've talked before about on the show. And the sequel of the game is called We Didn't Play Test This Either, which I think is a great and funny title. And so it has the same sort of mechanics as We Didn't Play Test This at all, where the object of the game is to win, and it's got kind of a Fluxian sort of mechanic to it, where you're just playing cards, and the cards tell you what's going to happen. And very little strategy, but a lot of laughs and fun. And I think the big highlight of this birthday party was we played a game of Time's Up Title Recall, which is a really cool party game, which I keep calling it a combination of charades, password, and the $25,000 pyramid, or gesture, or something like that. And we'll probably talk about that a little bit later on in the show, but it's a really, really great party game, and one that I would recommend picking up. So I might as well go ahead and just mention some modeling stuff, too, because I do modeling now. So
look at you.
I'm a modeler. So I'm still painting my battle group box for Protectorate of Menoth for War Machine. I've now moved on to my Warcaster, which is the smallest of all the figures, and doing pretty good. I've gotten all the base coating done. This guy actually has, he's holding a big flail, like a big flailing sort of weapon. And so the flail itself and his hands are one piece, and then that attaches onto the rest of his body. But I figured that I wasn't going to be able to paint like his chest unless I painted them separately. So I'm actually painting this armless guy right now, and then I'll be painting the weapon and attaching that on later.
He's looking good.
Do you think he's doing okay?
Your first foray into painting, as I've said before, is remarkable. It's very well done.
It's really hard to paint the little small stuff. I mean, I'm having, I think I need to get like a big gooseneck lamp or something because I'm having a hard time seeing. So
yeah, you can get the big magnifying glasses.
Oh, that could be too. Mm-hmm. So listeners who are really into painting and stuff, give me some suggestions of like lamps or magnifying glasses that you use that might be good for me to add to my little studio that I've got here. Well, that just about wraps up games we've been playing, and so now it's time to move on to some listener feedback.
Of course, and the best way to reach us is the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
So if you want to give John some tips on how he can improve his painting studio or anything else, we would love to hear it. And here we have some emails that we received since the last episode.
That's right. Yeah, we got another great email from Nathan Clark, one of our New Zealand listeners. And he says, hi, guys. Thanks for another great episode. I particularly enjoyed your review of Diplomacy. I played this game when I was in high school and at university. Listening to you guys brought back some fond memories playing this game. I remembered once inviting six other people over for a game. I sent them all formal invitations in the mail, setting the theme for the event along the lines that the world is on the brink of a disaster and, quote, your diplomatic skills are urgently required to avoid further breakdowns in intergovernmental negotiations that, if not corrected, could lead to a great war.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We got right into the theme and even dressed up in bow tie and suit tails for the game. He said, the only thing is, I ended up with Italy.
Oh.
Frowny face. So everyone knows that playing Italy is quite challenging, or put another way, Italy sucks. Sorry, Italian listeners. Well, that's my excuse for losing badly in that particular game anyway. However, I really enjoyed the experience and have never forgotten it. Everyone was doing backroom deals, secret pacts were established, alliances were made, then broken, and all in all, it was a lot of fun. So he says, as you say, Diplomacy is a really unique game. I love it so much that back in the day, I had the board laminated. even though I haven't played this game in about 15 years, I've never traded away my copy and still own it to this very day. This may be a slight breach of the Jones theory.
I forgive you, Nathan.
Yep. So, it seems like he had sort of a similar experience where, you know, it's a very vivid game experience and something that you talk about for a long time.
The more you put into it, the more you take out.
Definitely.
All right. I have an email here from Joe Krause, a loyal listener since the very first episode, and we do appreciate that.
Yeah. And he calls himself our favorite Origin stalker. So we did see him quite a few times at Origins. And, next year, Joe, we're going to have to play a game with you, man.
Absolutely.
Because we never had a chance to play.
It was always at the most inopportune time.
Yeah.
I felt bad.
Like, we're going to play in something next year.
We were not blowing you off. We promise.
We promise.
He had an idea to throw in with the whole marking your games. We had the great idea last episode about putting the stickers inside of the boxes.
Yeah.
Which I think is still a good idea.
Cool idea.
This one is something that I've been trying to do, and it's he talks about logging your plays on BoardGameGeek. On BoardGameGeek, say you play a game of Dominion. You can go on there and say, it can be as very simple as, yes, I played Dominion today. Or you can put, I played Dominion, here's who I played it with, here's their BGG usernames, here's the final score. You can get really in-depth. You can even put comments down for it. And I thought it was a really good idea because I'm an iPhone snob, and they have an app. They have an app for that.
Emphasis on snob.
Thank you. And they have an app where you can log your board game plays really simple. You can just, you know, press a few buttons and bam, you did it. So he was saying you can actually generate stats. You know, when we do our top 11 or at some given point every year, I can actually run the stats on all the games that I've played, and I can see, you know, what I own that I haven't played much, or games maybe I don't own that I played a lot of and maybe I should get. So there's a lot of neat things. So if you actually go on BoardGameGeek and check out my username, which is Shrieking Emu, don't ask. it's a long story. You can get on there and you can see what I've been doing. And I'm going full board geek on it. I'm actually adding comments like, oh, this is, I tried the all gold mechanic for Dominion and here's how it came out.
Wow.
Hey, I'm going
statistics on.
I'm going whole hog with this one. So
okay.
Great suggestion from Joe, and we will see you at Origins.
Absolutely. All right, we got another email in the inbox from Michael Katz, a longtime listener to the show, and he says, great episode, guys. I really enjoyed the Tanglefoot bag.
All right, and he's the one.
Yeah, and look forward to further future incarnations. It was the right amount of time for He says the mostly game podcast. Yeah, I think he probably meant the mostly board game podcast. Yeah. So I also enjoy the segments on Chi-Tag and the Day of Diplomacy and feel inspired to hold my own. He asked if did we have special invitations, and we did.
We did.
You know, could we upload a picture of the invitation to Board Game Geek?
Absolutely.
To the
Guild? Okay. I can even put up a blank one so that you can put in your own information.
That's a great idea. Yeah. So we would really encourage you to do your own Day of Diplomacy if you're able to get a copy of the game and get the people together. Lots of fun. So, yeah, I had a great time at Chi-Tag, and I'm glad you enjoyed that, Michael. All right, well, I think that just about wraps up the feedback we got. We got lots of other great emails. We really appreciate all the feedback that we've been getting. We've been getting a lot more emails lately.
Yeah, it's the best part of doing the show. By
it is.
Far.
Yep. I released the show on one day, and like within a couple of days, we'll get some emails in, and it really is cool to feel like we're connecting with you know actual
getting
people,
emails, so. Meeting listeners. That's by far the best part.
Best part, definitely. So so keep those emails coming. All right, so I think it's time.
It's time for the big announcement.
The big announcement. Cody, talk to us about it.
Okay. Now, as many of you listeners know, Board Game Geek users, there is a certain individual who runs probably the most successful board gaming podcast out there.
Without
a
doubt.
It would have to be.
Yep.
And that, of course, is Tom Vassell of the Dice Tower. We've poked fun at him many times on this show, but we really do care for and respect him. He does a lot of great work and has given so much to the board gaming community, and
absolutely, you know, it is so much our personality just to kind of make fun of people and tease, but it's because of the fact we have such respect, and so if we don't make fun of something, then it's probably because we don't like.
Right.
That would be a reason why we don't like. If we don't like something, we wouldn't make fun of it. So, so we really respect Tom, and we love what he's doing for the board game hobby.
Yep. And recently, he wrote a blog post and mentioned on the what is now the latest episode of the Dice Tower that. He and his family are going to be moving from Korea. Now, Tom is a Christian missionary over in Korea. He pastors a church there, and you know, he's got his whole family there. His whole life has been there for years and years and years.
Nine years. I think all of his children were born in Korea except for his oldest. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And but they're going to be moving on. He's I don't even think he's sure where he's going yet.
Yeah, he's looking for a new direction. He's just asking, you know, God to lead him in the right direction, he's not sure. He's opened a lot of options.
Yep. But the biggest thing that shocked me when I read that is the moving costs that are associated with this, because he had estimated in the $15,000 range, and at first I was taken aback by it, but then I thought, you know, it's like, how many plane trips is that, you know, to get, you know, just the family over to wherever they end up, you know.
Yeah, that's like at least 7 plane tickets, because, I mean, their youngest daughter is just a little baby, but all the other kids would need seats. And,
oh, yeah, and then they have to have, you know, all of their belongings, all of Tom's games, of, you know. That is just a major undertaking to just to pretty much uproot and move somewhere else after being so established. So he had put out kind of a call to help, you know, to maybe send donations and all that, but... John and I both felt a call that we really wanted to help him out on this, and he's done so much, and we wanted to give back to him. So we don't have a fancy name for this; it's just the Tom Vassell Fundraiser. Though,
yeah, we wanted to call it the get Tom the hell out of Korea Fund, but we thought that wasn't an appropriate thing to say.
You know, Tom Aid,
Tom Aid, the Atomic Relief, Atomic maybe. Relief. Yeah,
but we have the Tom Vassell Fundraiser, and this is a way that. You can help one of the premier gaming podcaster, and also maybe add to your gaming collection. And John's going to tell you how you can do that.
That's right. We want to make this have a little bit of incentive for you guys. I mean, it's the holiday season, and so we would hope that, you know, you're already kind of in a giving mood anyway. You know, we definitely are. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you've got a little bit of extra money and you can throw it in this direction to help Tom out, that would be fantastic. But we want to give you a little bit of an incentive too. So. We've actually partnered with a rather large number of game companies who have agreed to donate brand new games to form a large prize package, a glamorous, glitzy prize package of new games. And we're going to raffle this off.
Do a little name drop here. These aren't just dinky game companies.
Right,
here.
Yeah. We've got no fewer than, got a ton of companies here. Companies like Days of Wonder, Fantasy Flight Games, AEG, Out of the Box Games, Bucephalus Games, and even more.
And so more are coming in.
Crosscut Games, yeah. And so even more are coming in all the time. Okay, so we're amassing a giant pile here, and so we want to make it worth your while. This is going to be a huge prize pack. No shipping for you, so you know we'll definitely cover all the shipping costs as well. And so here's how you can win. Okay, we would starting now as you're listening to this from now until the end of January. Every donation that we receive. via the donate button on gameonpodcast.com. And we'll also put a link to that donation page on our guild. And check out on Board Game Geek 2. We're going to be putting together a thread that'll have a link to that as well. But there'll this be this one donation section. It'll say Game On with Cody and John, but these donations for the next 2 months will be exclusively for Tom, yep, for Tom Vassell.
We'll send it right to his personal account. I wish we could do the giant novelty check, but...
Yeah, that's right, you know, with balloons and stuff.
Shipping on that might be expensive, but everything will be sent directly to Tom to help him and his family...
Get moved on into the next phase.
I almost said get the hell out of Korea.
So anyway, so you know, anything that you donate, 100% of that will go to Tom Vassell and to meeting that need. But here's how it's going to work. For every $5 that you donate to Tom, you know, via this fundraiser, you're going to get one entry into this giant game prize package raffle. Now, like I said, the games are still coming in, so we haven't gotten a whole list yet of what's going to be included. And we can say that games like Ticket to Ride Marklin, Dwarven Dig, the new version of Dwarven Dig,
Colosseum that we just mentioned,
and many, many more are going to be included in this prize package. Once we get the full list, we will be putting that out via our guild and on Board Game Geek. You'll be able to find that out what it is. But for every $5 that you donate, you're going to get one entry into this raffle. And then sometime in early February, we're going to draw one name who will win this fabulous prize package.
That's right. You'll take home everything.
Right.
And we're going to be accepting donations right up until the end. So this list will just continue to grow.
Yeah.
And we're even going to throw in a few special things. We'll reveal more of this as we get later on into it. But one of the items is a special certificate.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about this. Yeah.
That you're going to want to get. It entitles you, the holder of the certificate, to play one Euro game with me. You get to pick the Euro game. If you want to pick Kalis, I don't know why you would, but you can pick it and we will play it. So find me at Origins, find me at Gen Con. And
Cody will not complain.
No, you will have a great time.
You'll have no rolled eyes.
It will be beautiful.
He will have a great time with you, and you have the opportunity to beat him at a Euro game.
Right, which will not be hard. but that may be worth the price alone right there.
I think so, yeah.
But
so.
You can take home that. We're going to get a lot of other great games. And, you know, for just... You know, $5 here or there, you could take home a carton full of games.
Right. So donate early, donate often, donate a lot. Because yep, the more that you donate, the more times your name is going to go into the hat there to win this giant prize package. So,
and more importantly, more money goes to Tom.
That's the most important thing. Yep. So we would love to be able just to amass just a giant amount of money to send to him. Yep. So please help us out. And, you know, we've always just sort of asked a little bit for donations to the show, but even over and above that, you know, our meager expenses that it takes to put this podcast on, we want to really, this holiday season, do something big, you know, do something big to help someone else who has helped the gaming hobby so much. So help out Tom Vassell and donate to the fundraiser. There you go.
There it is.
Okay. Well, big announcement there. That was
good. Big announcement. And I think the best way to cleanse the palate from such a big announcement is a...
It's time for a Game On bonus review. Bonus review. Bonus review. Bonus review.
Well, I can get behind that. Sure.
That was surprising.
Yeah.
Right?
Whoa. That just
I got to press the big button.
Just jumped right out there. Yeah. Yeah. So we're gonna do a quick bonus review. And what's our bonus review for this episode?
Dominion Seaside.
Yes. Yeah. So we're not gonna do a full review like a Bly Tri Deny style review on Dominion Seaside because hey, it's an expansion.
Right.
And we're gonna assume that you know the rules to Dominion. And if you don't, then go and check out episode 7 of Game On with Cody and John, where we do a full review of Dominion and talk about how amazingly awesome it is.
That sounds like ages ago.
It was. It was like more than a year ago.
Wow.
So yeah, go check out episode 7 if you want to know how to play Dominion. But we're going to talk a little bit about Seaside, about what this expansion adds to the game, and go through just a few of the cards that might be interesting to you. Now, as you know, maybe from listening to our Top 11 show, this is currently number one on my all-time favorite games list. Nope. And the more I've played Seaside, it's actually just added to my love of this game. So I'm going to go and just force my hand there and just say, this is a buy. I'll just say it up front. It's a great expansion.
Have Dominion, why not? You know,
might as well just throw it on there. So, yep. So anyway, the game of Dominion comes with the basic game of Dominion comes with the 25 kingdom card decks, as well as all the treasure, victory point decks, the curse card deck, trash card, all that kind of stuff. This expansion is not a full version of the game.
This is the first true expansion.
Right. Dominion Intrigue came out last summer, and that was actually a full version of the game, so you didn't even have to have the original Dominion. For this game, you need to have either the original Dominion or the Dominion Intrigue to be able to play. And the reason is because this version does not come with any of the treasure cards or any of the victory point cards or any of the curse cards, so you can't play without those.
Right.
But has all these kingdom decks that you can add to the game, as well as some little funny bits.
Yeah.
Like, what does it come with?
It comes with these these metal coins. It was kind of odd seeing, you know, little bits and counters for Dominion since it's so card driven. And actually with all the preview materials, you know, they had some press release images and they showed them, and I was like, oh no, Dominion's already jumping the shark.
Dominion's gone too far.
So you'll get a bunch of those coins, which work with the pirate ship card, which we'll go into in a little bit. And then they have the silver tokens. I believe they say Dominion on them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what they have on the other side. But those are tokens that are used for the embargo card, which we'll also explain later. Are they completely necessary? No, but
they're pretty cool.
They're neat little things.
You know? I mean, they're weighty. They're
quality. I mean, they got some heft to them. But
I would have been fine with just like cardboard tokens, but they went all out making the metal stuff. Yeah. So.
And they also have these little play mats that work with cards like you know, the pirate ship, the island,
and the native village. I think is the other one.
I don't know how necessary those were, but. I think they wanted to keep that $40 retail price point.
That's probably true.
You know? And they're like, well, we're not putting as many cards, but we got this stuff.
So. I think they also help you to keep – those playmats help you to keep cards organized.
Yeah, they're a help.
Yeah, because now there's going to be some cards that are going to remain on the table for longer. One of the features of Dominion is that you play everything, and then at the end of your turn, everything goes in your discard pile. Mm-hmm. Well, with Seaside, there's going to now be some cards that are going to remain on the table for a little bit longer. And that is the basic new mechanic of Seaside that is the big feature, and that is the duration cards.
Yep.
So there's all these cards that have an orange background to them, and these are cards that have a duration feature to them. And what that means is that you're going to play the card on your turn as an action, and you're going to get to do something. It'll be the typical Dominion actions, plus one buy, plus one coin, you know, do this, do that, whatever. And then it'll also say what this card will do on your next turn. So there might be a card that'll say, plus one coin, plus one buy, now and at the beginning of your next turn. And so you would use it that one time, and then you discard everything else that you'd be using on that turn, but that duration card stays on the table. And I think the rules suggest that you maybe have like two imaginary rows in front of you, you know, and then move it down to show that it's moved to that second turn. Mm-hmm. And so that is really changes the strategy of the game, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, with Dominion, you know, there was a lot of different strategies you could use because there are so many cards, but everything was on a turn-by-turn basis. You know, you had all these strategies, but still, it's what can I do in one turn. This really kind of blows the door open. Now you're thinking in sets of turns. You know, you're like, well, this turn I can do this, and then the following one, since that duration's still there, I can maybe do this. So it really opens up your thinking into, you know, you're thinking more than one turn at a time, and you can really get some really nice combos out of that.
Right. One of my favorite cards that has sort of this duration feature is called the Tactician. Mm-hmm. And this is where you play it to the table, and it says that when you play this card, you're going to discard your entire hand. And then if you do that, then at the beginning of your next turn, it's plus five cards, plus one buy, and plus one action, I believe. Yeah. The three things you get to do there. And so that means that, you know, if you play this to the table, and then to kind of remind you that that's going to be happening, you know, you'll move that card down to the second imaginary row. And then at the beginning of your next turn, you're then going to get plus five cards. So now you're looking at, you're basically delaying your action so that you can gain 10 total cards.
For a mega turn.
Yeah, 10 total cards, a couple of, you know, two actions and two buys. So you can really set yourself up to do some pretty amazing stuff. So that's a cool duration card that's in there. There's also a card called the Wharf.
I am not a merry man.
That is not Lieutenant Wharf, no. And this is a duration card where it says now and at the start of your next turn, plus two cards and plus one buy. So you get the benefit of that card for two rounds. And, right. You know, so that's pretty cool. So that's the main mechanical element that's going to be different in Seaside is the addition of these duration cards. The other thing that you're going to have is these three cards that involve these play mats. And we're going to focus on two of them that are really interesting. And that one of those is the island.
Mm-hmm.
And what does the island do?
Yeah, the island is a card. It's worth two victory points on its own. And what it lets you do is you take the island card plus another card in your hand and you put it aside. So you put it on the island playmat. I guess that's what it's for.
Right.
So that allows you, and then at the end of the game, you take it back into your deck for scoring purposes. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
the card goes on vacation.
Yeah. ideally, you know, you put a province card with the island right. and sit it away. So you still get the points, but it's not clogging up your deck anymore.
Yep.
So that's what you'll use this island playmat for. Is it's a nice little tidy place. Or what are these stack of cards? Oh, yeah, that's my island cards.
Yeah, it's probably so you don't accidentally snatch it up and throw it in your discard right. pile, you know, at the end yeah. of your turn.
Not completely necessary, but nice.
Yeah,
you know?
Not terrible. Yeah. Yep. And then there's also a card called the Pirate Ship.
Oh, which, the Pirate Ship.
which is an oft-used card in our game, recent games. And this is a card where when you play the Pirate Ship, the other players on the it's almost like an attack card. The other players in the game have to turn over the top two cards of their deck. If either of those cards is a treasure, then the guy who played the Pirate Ship gets to pick which treasure gets trashed. Each player, not just one, each player that has a treasure, one of those treasures, the treasure that they turn over is going to get trashed. And then if any of treasures were trashed using this card, then you're going to take one of those metal gold coins and stick it onto your pirate ship playmat. Then on a later turn, you can continue to do this and make people turn over cards and trash their treasure, get these and build up these little metal tokens. Or you can actually use those metal tokens, and you'll get plus one treasure for each metal token that's on your
plus one coin.
You know, that means that if you have four coins on there, then you know you get plus four coin every turn. Mm-hmm. So it's like having that just always going on. So you're screwing your neighbor, and you're getting gold that you can use each turn. So
it's the pirate way.
It is the pirate way.
So maybe not the Pittsburgh pirate way.
It's an annoying. No, definitely not. It's definitely an annoying card if you're not using it. But it's a pretty powerful card as well. So I like that one. And then I think two of the more interesting cards in the deck, probably my favorite card in the deck, is the embargo card.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where those little metal embargo tokens come into play. I think the embargo card itself only costs two coin to buy.
Right.
And then when you play it, you actually have to trash the embargo card. But if you do that, then you get to take one of these little metal embargo tokens and put it on top of any of the supply decks in the whole game. So, and that could be victory point cards or it could be action cards. And I think it could be treasure cards too.
Sure.
Yeah. You put it wherever you want. And so once those tokens are on there, whenever anybody buys a card from that pile, in addition to getting that card, they're going to get one curse card for every embargo token that's on there. So it's like kind of paying a tax.
Yeah.
So an embargo, if you
will. I will.
And then the other card that we wanted to talk about is the treasure map card. So, Cody, what does the treasure map card do?
The treasure map is a pox upon everything that is good and holy.
Yeah.
Basically, it is a card that costs four coin to buy. And the special ability of it is if you trash two of them from your hand, you get four gold cards. So not
four coin.
Not four coin, four gold cards, which immediately go on top of your deck. John, Ken, and I played two games of this that had the treasure map involved in it. And Kaylin was like the best case scenario for the treasure map, and I was the worst case scenario.
Right.
She would buy a couple, she would get the two in her hand, trash them, and then get the four coin. And then she's just immediately jump-started and buying provinces. Because
the next turn, you're drawing 12, at least 12 gold. You're getting a province.
Instant province.
Yeah.
Whereas I would get some, and I would always get one in my hand and not two. And so if you only get one, it's worthless.
Right.
But if you get two, you can trash them and get the gold. I'm always very reticent to say a card is overpowered. I usually groan at the people, oh, this card's broken, this combo's broken. I'm like, I'm the apologist. I'm like, they play tested it, you know.
Yeah.
It's try a different strategy. But early on, that card may be a little bit overpowered. Because if you can get that off early in the game, you're at such an advantage. And
it takes so long for someone else to try to catch up.
It's
using a different strategy. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a game changer to be sure.
Yeah. So in addition to those cards, there's lots of other ones that do various things. So a lot of variety there. So Cody, what is your impression of Seaside, and you know, what does it bring to the game and so forth?
Like I said, when I first saw the early release stuff, I thought they were getting a little jumpy on like, oh, we got tokens now, we got playmats. I'm like, oh, this game's getting kind of out of control.
Miniatures in the next one.
Yeah, you know. And I still think the expansions maybe are coming out a bit fast. You know, they're trying to strike while the iron's hot, and I can't fault them for that.
Sure.
I think it brings a lot of good things to the game. You know, Intrigue kind of brought the hybrid cards, you know, the half victory point, half something else cards. Mm-hmm. And these bring the duration cards as well as some of the other things. It's a great addition. I would definitely, you know, if you're new to Dominion, start with the base set, work your way to Intrigue, and then work your way to Seaside. I do think it's a sequential thing, but... I personally can't wait to start mix and matching from all three sets,
yeah,
and seeing what kind of cool combinations you can get. Because to me, that's the greatest thing about Dominion is you can have a totally different strategy every time. And I think Seaside, it keeps the feel of the other two, and it's a worthy addition to your Dominion collection.
Yep, I feel pretty much the same way. Of course, I gave my buy try tonight earlier in the review. One of the things that I just love about Dominion, Cody and I were talking about this, is that a game like Power Grid, Puerto Rico, a Euro game that has a big strategic element, Age of Steam would be a big, like a railroad. Okay, that's enough.
Sorry. What? Sorry.
A railroad game where you have a strategy and you can just sort of play it out and see how it's going to work. And you can start out at the beginning of the game and say, I think I'm going to try this technique to try to win the game. But you don't get to find out whether that technique worked until the end of the game, which might be 3 or 4 hours later.
or you could find your strategy is kind of failing like 45 minutes in,
yeah,
and then you're stuck getting your butt kicked for 3 hours. Yeah, because
you can't back up and, right, and then try to do something different. So the thing I love about Dominion is it's the same sort of idea where you can have some kind of strategy. You know, Cody mentioned earlier that he did the cash only or the money only strategy where all he's doing is using his money to buy bigger money to eventually buy the victory point cards, no action cards at all. Well, that's an interesting strategy. You don't know whether it's going to work or not, but you can try it and you can play it out and see if it works. And the game's over in half an hour.
Yeah.
And so if it didn't work, you just go, that didn't work and I won't do that again. But the speed of the game allows you to try lots of different strategies. And plus, since they change every time you use different kingdom cards, there's just so much variety in the game. I can't say enough good things about Dominion. I just think it's a fantastic game. One of the most innovative things that's come out in years, and you think you need to have it in your collection, and I think you need to have the expansions too. So, big time buy for me.
Absolutely, buy for me as well. Go get it.
Yep. Well, that about wraps up our bonus review of Dominion Seaside. Now it's time to move on into the big deal.
The big deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare him room. And heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing, and heaven and heaven and nature sing.
All right, it is the big deal, and as part of our obligatory holiday episode, Ought 9, we're going to give you the Uncommon Gift Guide for the Common Gamer. Now, as John mentioned in the open, it's many podcasts, you know, have the, you know, best Euro game, best blah game. Like, we want to go in a little different direction.
Yeah, even like the Spiel does, I think, a really good gift guide because they do it like games for people who like travel, games for people who like food. You know, that's a cool way of dividing it up. Yeah. You know? But, you know, we're going to go a little different direction.
That's right. We're going to give you some categories that may work, may not work for you, but we think it's unique and we'll give you some good games to get for friends or maybe enemies.
Right, yeah. That's a good way to kick it off.
That's right. Our first category is game to give your enemy.
Yeah, because we feel like it's a good time to give at the holiday season and, you know, give to your friends, give to your enemies.
That's
you know?
Right.
So if you had to pick out a game to give to your enemy, Cody, which game would you pick?
It was tempting to just say Puerto Rico, but I decided to go a little different route and say Ghost Stories. Because they will never win.
Wow,
that game is hard.
That's pretty amazing. I'm now interested to see. Let me back up a second.
Okay,
because we want you to know, the listeners, that much like our top 11 when we did this one goes to 11 episode, we did not share this list with each other at all.
No.
I do not know what Cody picked. He does not know what I picked for these two. We worked the categories out ahead of time, but then we went and picked our own games. I just wanted to mention that because of the fact that my game is Ghost Stories.
Are you serious?
I am serious,
oh
yep.
My gosh.
And for the exact same reason, because, you know, give it to someone, they will never win. They will always feel like a loser. And I know that's a little bit mean and vindictive, but, you know.
It's your enemy.
It's your enemy.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And I thought I was being original. Puerto Rico is a cop out, you know. It's like, I can't say Kalis, I can't say Puerto Rico, you know. They'll be expecting that.
I mean, you know, Cody and I are Christians, so, you know, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, but, you know, give them ghost stories.
That's right.
All right, so let's move on to the next category, and that category is the game to ask your rich uncle for, or, you know, rich relative of some sort.
Sure.
You know, that game that, you know, you would love to have it in your collection, but there's no way that you're going to be able to afford it. So, you know, you sidle up next to your rich uncle and say, hey, Uncle Bob, you know, I sure would like this for Christmas. So, Cody, game would you ask your rich uncle for, rich relative?
There's a lot of good ones out there. A lot of collector's editions of games, you know, like Settlers of Catan has, you know, the big treasure chest game.
Right.
I actually said Space Hulk. Because it seems outside of Indiana, it is, you know, it's very hard to get, except, you know, they unearthed some copies
at Games Workshop. Imagine that.
Don't get me started on that. That makes me not want the game at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, the game just retails, even if you can find it, it's $100. And then moving on from there, it's just more and more expensive, especially if you want to get into painting it and doing all these cool things to it. So I will definitely say Space Hulk. If you have a rich uncle, you may want to consider... dropping that note in their email there.
Okay.
So, John, what would you ask your rich uncle for, or rich relative in this case?
I went back and forth between a couple of them here, and I decided to go with Pitch Car and all of the expansions.
Oh, okay.
Now, Pitch Car just on its own, we're not even going to mention prices, because I don't even know what the prices of a lot of these games are, but Pitch Car is very expensive, mm-hmm. and all of the expansions and everything. It's these very nice wooden components. It's a game where you're flicking... like these little wooden discs that represent cars around this board. It's a whole lot of fun, but it's just always been out of my price range. And so I figured, you know, I'd go ahead and the easy answer is it was between that one and the War of the Ring collector's edition.
Oh yeah. Which is the Foot Locker.
Oh yeah. Which, you know, painted miniatures and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
So, but I'm going to go with Pitch Car and all the expansions.
Very good.
So now our next category has to do with kids, because I have two kids, and Cody and Kalen have no kids currently, but, you know, maybe in the future.
Sure.
And so we wanted to talk a little bit about kids games. We have two categories of kids games, and we want to start off with a category that is very near and dear to me with the two small kids, and that's the kids game that won't annoy adults.
Okay.
So, you know, I think there's plenty out there that will annoy adults, and we'll get to that in a second. But kids game that won't annoy adults. So, Cody, what did you pick for that one?
As tempted as I was to put Lupin Louie in, because that game just warmed my heart.
A late edition.
That's right. I said Sorry Sliders.
Okay.
I won't be surprised if you pick that one as well. It's a really fun game, and you might find that your kids are beating you at it.
Yeah.
But... I find that, you know, that's one I want to bring to the table quite a bit, because it's a fun little dexterity-based game, and you can really get the kids, even the young kids, into it pretty quickly, and it's a lot of fun. So Sorry Sliders is my pick.
I just played that game with my kids yesterday, and they both really enjoyed it, and even at the three-year-old, she was doing great at it. So a little tough with the scorekeeping, I guess, but you know, you can take care of that. No, that's a great choice. No, I didn't pick that one.
Okay.
I actually picked a new game that I just picked up recently called Ringo Flamingo.
Okay.
And this is a... I don't think you've played this one yet.
No, I've not.
Okay. It's a dexterity-based sort of game along the lines of Sorry Sliders, where you have these little plastic boats and you have these white rings that represent lifesavers, I guess, something like that. And there's a slot in the boat where you put the ring down in the slot and then bend it backwards so you can flick it onto this board.
Oh, cool.
And then it's the elevated board that kind of sits on top of the box that has flamingos, big chunky plastic flamingos, as well as alligators.
Mm.
And so you're trying to flick these things so that they land onto the flamingos and don't land onto the alligators. You get positive points for flamingos, negative points for alligators. And so this game is a whole lot of fun because, you know, as long as your kid has enough dexterity to be able to pull their finger back and flick a little thing forward, then they can have a shot at this game. It's actually kind of hard for adults, too. I found that my son beats me on a regular basis with this because he just has... better dexterity as far as that goes. So that's my choice, Ringo Flamingo. Real nice one there.
Very good. Okay, to kind of follow up on that, we have now the kids game that will annoy adults. So of all the games out there, what is your choice for the gift kids game that will annoy adults?
there was almost too long of a list for me to even come up with just one. And of course, I was thinking also of mass market games, mm-hmm. not just necessarily gamer games.
Right.
But the one that I thought of, and it's only because my daughter wants to play this all the time, and that's the game Buckaroo.
Okay.
And Buckaroo is, I guess it's sort of an equivalent game of like Perfection. I don't know if you've ever played the game Perfection. And that's a game where you have these little shapes that you're trying to fill in on a grid, and you turn a timer and it goes.
Oh, okay.
And then eventually it goes pop, and it knocks all of the pieces out, right? I really
it's
don't.
It's called Perfection?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
I really hate these games where there's this timer and you're like, and then something happens, it pops or explodes or something like that. And so that's totally what Buckaroo is. It's this horse. It's a big three-dimensional bucking bronco horse that you basically cock. You put his feet down and he has a saddle on it with these little spokes. And then all of the pieces are, little things that would go on a donkey or something that's in the middle of the desert, like a prospector's shovel or a bedroll or a hat or something like that, a guitar. And you just take turns putting these onto the donkey. And then eventually there's like a little, pressure sensor on the saddle. And if you get too much stuff on there, then he bucks and kicks his legs up and everything knocks off. And my daughter just loves this. I mean, she'll just do it just so that she can, put something real heavy in the middle so the little kick and she can just laugh and scream and shriek. And I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack every time I play this game.
Those games are tense.
Oh my gosh. So that's so I play it with her because I love her and I know she really enjoys it, but that's the one for me. So Cody, what was your pick for kids game that will annoy adults?
This got brought up last night as we were playing Loop and Louie, which I mentioned for the 80th time. Kaylin had said, it'd be fun to bring out like Hungry Hungry Hippos again. No, it wouldn't.
No.
I hated that game when I was a kid, and I hate it even more now. It's basically like, okay, and make a lot of noise. I was a jumpy kid. I didn't want to mess with it. I'm like, oh, stop doing that. That is, my kids will never own that game.
No.
I'm sorry. No. And if any relatives buy that game, I will throw it away. Because it is the worst kind of game. It's a game where all the pieces, the little marbles go everywhere. It makes a bunch of noise. It gets broken. The kids cry. It's a terrible game on all levels. Hungry, Hungry Hippos.
I can't disagree with that.
God rest you, merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born upon this day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings.
All right, so there's our kids' game section. So we'll move into something that's maybe for the couples out there, and that is a category we didn't come up with a clever name for it. It's basically the short two-player game.
Right.
And this isn't short. It has nothing to do with the size of the game. It could be a giant board game or whatever, but it's something that is for two players and that can be played in 30 minutes or less.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a good game to have in your collection if you are a married couple or just two friends that play, or, you can always find one other player, it seems. So, Cody, what did you pick for short two-player game?
I really wanted to pick Harry's Grandson Baseball, but I know there's not a lot of people out there who don't really care for baseball. So I went with the old standby, Cold War, KGB versus CIA.
Oh, very nice. AKA Blackjack, themed Blackjack.
That's right. But that game, I think, you can get people behind the theme because who doesn't love a good spy thing? That's neat. And the game plays easy because it's basically Blackjack. And, it's a nice way to fill a half an hour, and it's a lot of fun. So I would say Cold War KGB versus CIA.
Nice, nice choice.
What do you say, Johnny?
Okay. I don't see this as exclusively a two-player game, but I had to pick Dominion.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
Really?
It's number one game on my list, and I think it's a really good two-player game. It's just a different sort of strategy. I actually like it because I feel like I can keep track of what the other person has picked up.
Hmm.
So they're like, I know how many province cards the other person has gotten, so I can figure out how I need to accelerate my play or change things to be able to meet that balance there. So I like that because I feel like I have more control over the outcome.
Yeah.
So I think it's a real good two-player game. So I know it's kind of a cop-out, but
A little bit.
My backup game was going to be Ubongo Duel, which I think is a really great short two-player game. And Cody just made the noise because not everybody is good at those puzzle-style games.
Oh,
like
God,
Cody
I'm so
is not.
Bad at that one.
And so that one ends up not being that much fun for when he and I play, but because I win all the time. Yeah. All right, what's our next category?
The next category is stocking stuffer, and I'll explain that. This is a game that you could fit in a normal style Christmas stocking. So it's a game that is small in size, but would be a great thing to just put in that stocking stuffer. And yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
That's it, pretty much.
Nice description.
Hey, man, it's like...
Yeah.
All right, so what did you pick?
Okay, well, I picked one of three games, and it's any in this set of these small tin games from out-of-the-box games.
Okay.
And so the three new ones that just came out recently are Run Wild, talked about that one back in the Game on Inbox, Super Circles, and a game called 789.
Okay.
And so these are all kind of speed games, just nice light card games that you can bring out. Run Wild, I said, has a rummy element to it. Super Circles is about playing cards that have these concentric circles with different colors. You have to match the colors. Cody has an opinion on Super Circles.
It's a fine game, but my little bit of color blindness, plus I'm not very good at fast games.
Yeah.
I get killed every time I play it.
Yeah, I would omit Super Circles if you have any kind of color blindness at all, because it's about colors.
It's fun, though. It's a fun game, but it's not for me.
And then 789 is a game where the cards look almost Uno-like, but the card will have like a blue 7 on it. But then the 7 will say, then they'll be in the corner, it'll say plus or minus 2. So you play the 7, and then the next card that can be played would be a 9 or a 5. And then the 5 would say plus or minus 1 or whatever. And then you could play a 6 or a 4.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, and so that's kind of a speed game too. But any of these games, the box they come in is actually probably too big to put in a stocking. But once you pull it out of the box, then there's a tin that holds the game. That could just drop right into a stocking.
So and it looks any
of
nice those
games,
too.
Oh, real nice tin too. So any of those games I think would be good for stocking stuffers. So, Cody, what did you pick for stocking stuffer? Descent?
Yeah, I picked Demacher. it was tough. I almost went with the Looney Labs game, Chrononauts, because actually all their boxes now can kind of
fend their stocking. Yeah, yeah.
But I stayed with Looney, but I instead went even smaller and picked Treehouse.
Oh, okay.
Because it's the otherwise known as Ice House or the Pyramids game. It comes in just this kind of long, like square tube. And it has one set, and with that one set, you can actually play quite a bit of different games. And then, as you know, if you add more, and you could put more in a stocking, I guess, there's all these games on the internet. There's books with games. It's just kind of this expandable game. You can make up your own. It's good for kind of game creators, but it slides right in, doesn't take up much room at all, and you get a lot of bang for your buck there. So I picked Treehouse.
That's a good one, yeah. And just the basic Treehouse game, because it comes with the pyramids and a die, right, mm-hmm. Where you're trying to match your little set of pyramids with whatever's in the middle with
the house.
Yeah. And you roll the die and you can move your pyramids around in different ways. It's a lot of fun. Cool little strategic abstract game. Good one there. Ding dong, ding dong, that is their song with joyful ring. All caroling one seems to hear words of good cheer from everywhere, filling the air. Oh, how they pump, raising the sounds of inland town, telling the tale, gaily they ring while people sing songs of good cheer. Christmas is here, day, merry, merry, merry Christmas.
All right, our next category is this is a great holiday theme, the game to help start an addiction.
Yeah.
So if instead of the 12 days of Christmas, you have the 12 steps of Christmas, this is the game that you will need. So what did you pick for the game to start an addiction?
Okay, well, there's really only one game I can think of that...
Oh, no, we're going to match on this one.
...that really fits this one, and that's Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
And so did you match that?
I did. That's okay, one.
And specifically for folks who want to get into Magic... which I think is still, it's the granddaddy of all collectible card games. And I think now more than ever before, there are ways to get into Magic and get involved in that gameplay that aren't going to necessarily take you down some kind of downward spiral of financial ruin.
Yep.
And one of the best ways recently is they've come out with these dual decks. And there's a set you can buy now called Garruk versus Liliana. And it's these two themed decks, and they're actually designed to play against one another. And so they have really nice, powerful cards in them. So it's not really a basic sort of a thing. But, you can get involved in the game and get to see some of the more advanced mechanics of the game. But you can, I think it retails for $19.95. You can get both of those decks and, play with a friend and trade up. And Single L and David, our friends of the podcast here at work, they... they have this set, and they've played many times, and they say it's a really good way to get into the game at a kind of a low price point. So I'm not saying that you're not going to buy it and then want to go and buy hundreds of dollars worth of cards, because, you know, it happens. But right. But that would be my thing. So
yeah, I'll say this to add on. It's number one for a reason. I mean, it's got excellent mechanics, which have really only gotten better since they kind of did some little rules tweaks to it. And it's easier than ever to get into it. It's actually, it's a lot like D&D in that sense. You know, it's when I started playing Magic,
back in my day,
it was a lot harder to get in. Like, learning the rules was harder. There wasn't really starting set. You just kind of bought a 60 card random deck, and then you would have to buy boosters to supplement it. Now they've got these dual decks that are meant to play against each other. You know, they have, you know, decks for new players. They have a learning system that's really out there that didn't exist kind of in the earlier days. So it's a game that it can start an addiction. It certainly can. I know that. But it's also one that's a lot of fun. So I think we definitely both say Magic, because that can you can get that bug really bad.
Honorable mention to Stoner Flux, just saying.
Dude.
All right, so now we'll move on to a category that I came up with that I think it's a good one. We're going to have this one every year in our gift guide. And that is the category Euro game that you might talk Cody into playing. So this is for those, you know, Cody's expressed his dislike for a lot of Euro games. I happen to know for a fact, though, that there's a couple that he, you know, he'll play and that he'll like. And many would consider Settlers of Catan to be a Euro game.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would say that you
like Settlers quite a bit.
So, you know, we're not talking about a steel fortress here or a lockbox. You know, you can break Cody down and
yeah. It's not like I'm a character or I'm just, you know, saying, oh, I hate all Euro games. You know,
yeah.
I will try any game, but yeah. I just tend to not like Euro games.
Right. As a matter of fact, when Chris Hahn came over and played Colosseum with us, he even said, do you really not like Euro games? Or is that just like an act on the show? And I'm like, no, that's Cody. That's
I'm
how
authentic.
He is.
Yeah.
My choice for Euro game that I might be able to talk Cody into playing is Railroad Tycoon.
Really?
Yeah. And
okay.
I know you've expressed that you're not really into train games.
I could be.
But I feel like you could be. And this game, I even debated whether this was Euro or not, because there's a lot of components to it. But it is, the mechanics are very similar to a slightly more complicated, very Euro game called Age of Steam.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think it's got a lot of color to it. It's got a lot of economics to it. I think Cody has an appreciation for economics and for money management and that kind of stuff in games. I've seen his eyes kind of light up over certain games that have that kind of element to them. So we'll see. I don't own this game, and it's actually a little bit hard to find right now. I think that they're in the process. I think they've actually reprinted a version of Railroad Tycoon called Railways of the World, which they took it away from the, you know, Railroad Tycoon was originally a video game.
Right.
So I might see if I can get a copy of this one and get it to the table, but that's the one I said. So
okay.
So I don't know how you answer this particular category of game that you could talk yourself into playing, but
I picked Pillars of the Earth because I've played it and it wasn't terrible and it was all right. I actually kind of Railroad Tycoon was one that went through my head because I've seen it all laid out and I'm like, it's kind of Ameritrashy.
It's got a little bit of that, yeah.
So, you know, you might be able to sneak that one in on me and hoodwink me into playing that. But
now, I have a friend who owns Railroad Tycoon. He gets together pretty often to play it, so I might see if we can be able to go over to his house and play.
Yeah, but, you know, we played Pillars of the Earth once or twice, and like I said, it was okay. I'm trying to be positive.
Damning with faint praise there. Very nice.
It was fine. You got to build a cathedral. That was cool.
Yeah, it was nice. Nice wooden cathedral.
Yep.
All right. Mr. Kringle, is you gonna jingle the bells that'll tinkle all your troubles away? Everybody's waiting for the man with the bag, 'cause Christmas is coming again. He's got a sleigh full, that's not gonna stay full. He's got stuff to drop at every stop on the way. Everybody's waiting for the man with the bag, 'cause Christmas is coming again. He'll be here with the answer. All right,
our next category is, you know, party games are very popular. But we are looking for a party game with a title not ending in apples or wagers.
Yeah, it's very important.
And what did you pick on this one?
Hold on. Before we do that, I'm just going to back up and say Apples to Apples is a fine game.
Uh-huh.
Wits and Wagers is a fantastic game.
Yes.
And one of the, I think what they say now, the highest awarded party game in the history of party games.
Deservedly so.
Deservedly so. So we're not just saying that. But, you know, those games always come up in the party game category. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to throw in something that was a little bit different.
Right.
So. My choice for party game not ending in apples or wagers is Time's Up Title Recall.
It's got to be.
And that's we talked about it a little bit earlier in the game on Inbox, so I'll talk a little bit more about it right now. This is the game basically just comes with cards and a little timer. and a score pad, which they didn't even need to put the score pad in there, really. No. And so these cards, you're going to start off with 40 of these cards, and the cards are going to have titles on them of movies, books, songs, plays, things like that. So just general pop culture sort of stuff like that, and even going back into literature and things like that. And your job is you're going to have a partner, and this will be like sets of partners. So if you have eight players, then it would be four sets of two, you know. And you and your partner, you're going to try to be relaying these clues to your partner, and they're going to be trying to guess them. And so this deck of 40 cards will pass to the very first person, and the clue giver then in this first round can do pretty much whatever they want. They just can't say the name that's on the card. So the example that I would give is Cody. Okay, so
hi.
So we'll pretend like we're doing this. So,
oh, okay.
So there's this movie, and it has this big ogre in it, and it's a computer animated movie. It came out a few years ago. And,
what is Gone with the Wind?
Boy, you're terrible at this. No, it's ogre, and it's Mike Myers from
Citizen Kane.
Fail. Okay, well, you know, it's Shrek.
Oh, Shrek. Sorry.
And so,
I was so close.
So the first round, you can say whatever you want, and hopefully you can get the person who's a little bit more intelligent than Cody to pick Shrek or whatever. And then you would take that card and you'd move on to the next one. In the first round, the rule is that you can do as much as you want, and the other person can make as many guesses as they want, but you can't pass. If you get stuck on a card, you're stuck. But you only do this for 30 seconds. Try to get as many cards as you can. Then that deck, the rest of the deck, passes to the next pair, who will do the same thing. And the deck will just continue to be passed around until all of the cards have been claimed by somebody. Then you'll count the number of cards that you have and write it down, and that's your score for that round. Then you're going to gather up all the cards again, the same cards that everybody has already seen the answers for, and you'll go move on to round two, which is just you can only say one word, and then you can do whatever gestures you want to. And, you know, so Shrek, you might say ogre, you know, and then make some kind of a ogre gesture or something, and they would pick that one. Same thing, you go around. Oh, then the difference is that you can pass if you want to, but your guessers can only guess one time, and if they guess wrong, then you have to discard and move on. That'll go around for one round. Then by the time you get to the third round, you don't do any words at all. You can only do gestures. And so this was real funny in one of the games that we played, is that there were three Stephen King books in this particular deck that we had. And so we had Salem's Lot, which is about vampires. We had Pet Cemetery, which is about, you know, evil pets and right. cemeteries. And then we had The Stand, which mm-hmm. is, you know, whatever that's, well, it's about a...
You've read it.
It doesn't matter what it's about. So the point was is that as the game progressed, by the time you got to the second round, people were just saying, King? And then they would like make fangs, you know, or they would stand up, you know, or they would pretend like they were handling a shovel. And then by the third round, all you would do is make the fangs or to do the shovel. So it's almost more of a memory game even than a charades game.
Yeah.
I think a game like a charades game can turn people off real quickly.
Oh, yeah. You know?
It's like, oh, I don't really want to act things out or whatever. But this is more of a memory element. So your clue in the first round especially can just be, it's the Pink Floyd song that the other team didn't get. And then they can get it that way. So sorry, gone on a little bit about that one, but I wanted to give you a little bit more details about Time's Up Title Recall. This game retails for $19.95, and it is the best $19.95 that you will ever spend for a party game.
All I can add, it is the best party game I've ever played.
Wow. So that one rose to the top.
Yes.
Wow. I know we just played it recently. I hadn't had a chance to talk to you about it. Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Very cool. So sorry, Cody, didn't mean to steal the thunder there.
I thought we were doing it by a turn and either.
Sorry.
I kind of fell asleep.
I assume that your party game too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry.
Quite
simply the best party game I've ever played.
All right, very good.
All right, the next category is the new family tradition game. Now, I know a lot of families have a tradition. Here in Indiana, the card game Euchre is very popular, and I loathe that game with the Fire of a Thousand Suns. But, you know, a lot of families will play Rummy, and it's like my in-laws have kind of a variant of Rummy, which is actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
But this is for a game, not necessarily a card game, but a game to start a new family tradition. It's like, All right, starting this year, I'm kind of big on, you know, having just gotten married and, you know, wanting to start a family. I'm big on starting Jones family traditions.
Yay.
And so this was a game. Pick a game that you all, no matter what, at Christmas, we always gather around and play X.
This game.
And for me, I went kind of a strange pick with this one.
Descent.
Yeah. I will be the overlord. No,
sorry. Go ahead.
I picked Great Dalmoody.
Really?
Yeah, because I think... you're going to have a lot of people there anyway, assuming you have a large-ish family.
Yeah.
And you can just get together, and it's a wacky game. And, you know, it doesn't have an end mechanic. It's a real easy game to learn. And you can use a lot of the wackiness as part of the holiday thing. It's like, okay, well, whoever's the Great Dalmoody can order, you know, Cousin Sal to go get, you know, to go start the ham or something. You know?
Cousin Sal? Are we on Long Island or something?
I don't know.
go get Paulie to get the turkey out of the back of the car.
but it's a game where you're not constrained by time. You can play as long or as short as you want. And you can add some fun things in it and really make it a fun family tradition at the holidays. Because Great Dalmoody is not one that's always going to hit the table. You kind of have to be in the right mood for it. And I think you get everyone together, you play it, you can have some good, goofy fun and get new relatives into it really easily because it's a kind of a low ceiling there on the rules. So I picked...
Good pick, yeah. Kind of a little bit non-traditional.
Thank you.
The non-traditional traditional family game.
What did you pick?
Well, I picked something that we've
Dominion.
Played. Oh, that would have been a good one.
Yeah.
No, I picked something that I haven't, that I've played a couple of times at holidays with family that's worked out really good, and that's the game Imagine If.
Okay.
Yeah, and so this is kind of a mass market game. You can find this in a mass market retailer as well. I think most friendly professional game stores would have it as well.
Yeah.
But it's a cool sort of party game. The board itself is like a roll, not a roll and move, but you're just trying to get to the middle of this non-specific spiral. But the cards themselves, one person will draw a card, and you'll roll a die to indicate who the card is going to be about. The game actually comes with a dry erase marker where you draw on the board and write in these squares the different people. So, you know, you write your, you know, Cousin Sal or whatever in there. And so then you would say, you'd pick a card and you put that person's name in there. So it would be like, imagine if Cody were a type of transportation, what type would he be? And then there would be six choices. And, you know, bicycle, you know, game on jet or, you know, whatever. You'd pick these six things. And then you have these voting cards where you pick what you think everyone else will say. So it's not so much important that you're not supposed to match Cody. That's not the thing. You just want to be in the majority. Then everybody turns over their voting cards. Laughter and hilarity ensue. And then the right number of people will move forward. So it's a good game for people who know each other real well. Because you can really sort of pick out those specifics of someone's personality. But it's also good for someone who, you don't have to know people real well to do it. So I think it's a good way to bring families together. If you have the new boyfriend or girlfriend who comes over for Christmas dinner or whatever, or you're mixing two families together that don't really know each other real well, I think Imagine If would be a real good one. So
great pick.
Had success with that.
The wise men came, three made their way, two shot him with love while he lay. Shine love, 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 love was all around.
Okay, and for our final topic, we're going to make this real simple and just tell you what's on the top of each of our Christmas lists. So, John, if you could have just one game for Christmas, what game would you ask for?
Unfortunately... all the games that would be on my Christmas list are not going to be out by Christmas. So I thought real long and hard about this, and there's just not too much that's out right now that's been out that I would want to get. I mean, I would say Space Hulk if I didn't have a copy of it already.
Right.
But so I'm going to go ahead and just give you two games that
are can't play by the rules.
No, I can. Two games that are coming out in the near future that I'm real excited about, and so you know if I could have magically turned back time and got, or turned ahead time and gotten, I don't know.
The next expansion is the Dominion.
Yeah, that'd be good. Are there any more? Maybe I hadn't thought about that. No. So Speaking of Dominion, though, there's a game that's coming out this month, I believe, or maybe next month, from AEG called Thunderstone.
Oh, yeah.
That I'm very excited about because it has that card, that deck-building mechanic like Dominion. And from what I understand, that part of the game is like a village that you're going into to get items and weapons and things like that. And then there's another part of the game where you're going to go into kind of like a dungeon or a cave or something and fight bad guys with the stuff that you've gotten from the village with your deck building. So that sounds really, really cool. And I've been waiting for that next step in the Dominion style game. Yeah. You knew it was coming.
Yeah.
You knew it, yeah. You knew that as soon as this new mechanic came out that other games were going to come out. So real excited about Thunderstone. And also looking a little farther into the future from Jolly Roger's games and from Christian Leonard and Jason Matthews, the guys who designed 1960, The Making of the President, is a new game called Founding Fathers.
This game looks cool.
Yeah, and it's basically a game about like the Constitutional Convention where, you know, issues are coming up and you have cards in your hand that represent delegates and they have different stances on the issues and you play these to vote and do things like that. I'm a huge United States history buff and I love that era and, you know, love 1960 and that game design. So looking forward to that one coming out. I think it's coming out in Q2 of 2010.
There you go. So for Christmas, you're screwed, but we will.
I'll accept an IOU for Christmas. There
we pre-ordered this for you.
Right. So Cody, what is on the top of your Christmas list?
This is a weird pick for me because I know John knows what I'm about to say, and this game has just kind of crept into my mind more and more. It's Descent. Because yes. I used to own Descent, and I actually traded it a while back because I think I over-Jones theoried. I was like, well, I play D&D so much, you know, it's like, Descent really makes no sense. And
when you say you own Descent, you didn't just own Descent, you owned the three-dimensional, like, tile version.
Yeah.
You know, he was in deep.
I had the 3D version, all that, and I traded it away. And now kind of looking back, it's... D&D's not the same. I mean, there are similarities, but just kind of looking at it and what I've played of it, I miss it. I miss Descent.
Oh.
I don't necessarily miss the 3D board, because that kind of gets... It gets chipped real easy. It's hard to transport. I'm fine with just the regular board, but I'd probably go and paint the miniatures this time around.
Yeah.
But I would say Descent, it's got a lot of good expansions out there, and... I think the new one's coming out any time now,
Sea of Blood expansion. Yeah. Yep.
And I'd be fine with just the base set. It's something I'd like to get back into and something I'd like to play with you, John, quite a bit more. You know, get a group together, do some Road to Legend stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm happy about that. You just can't hide it.
Yeah.
I kind of have to pull, like I said, I over-Jones theoried that one. But I would say Descent.
Whoa, microphone malfunction.
I said Descent. No, I'd probably have to pick Descent.
Okay, all right, that's a good one there. I'm probably not going to get you that one for Christmas.
No, that's
but,
okay.
You
know, I figure no one will.
But I would consider.
That's also the rich uncle one.
That's right. Descent. Okay. Well, that's great. Well, I think that wraps up our 2009 gift guide. Hope that you enjoyed that. That's a, you know, slightly different things, but all the games we talked about, you know, were the categories might have been, you know, kind of on the humorous side, but the games we talked about are games we stand behind.
Sure.
Good stuff to get. So,
and if you have any last minute questions, send us an email at the Game On Inbox
at gameoninbox@gmail.com,
and we'll try to help you straight away.
Yeah, and you know, on our Board Game Geek Guild, feel free to post your. We'll put our categories and the games that we picked, but we'd love to hear what you would put into our special uncommon game categories. So that about wraps up this one, and we'll move on to By Try Deny, where we're going to talk about
Castle Panic. Buy, try, or deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple. All right, it's time for Buy, Try, or Deny. We have one of the newest, we couldn't pick a prefix. It's quasi-semi-pseudo-cooperative game. We have Castle Panic, and here to give you the rules rundown, as always, is my favorite co-host, John.
I'm your only co-host.
You're also my favorite.
Okay. Castle Panic is a brand new game that just came out this year from Fireside Games here in 2009. It is for 1 to 6 players, although the rules actually say 4 or more recommended. I think that's interesting when it's like, yeah, you can play with this many, but we don't recommend it.
Yeah.
Ages 10 and up, and you know, you can find this at multiple locations, including Myriad Games and your friendly professional game store. Here's the introduction from the rules. The forest is filled with all sorts of monsters, goblins, orcs, and even mighty trolls lurking in your shadows. They watched and waited as you built your castle and trained your soldiers, but now they've gathered their army and are marching out of the woods. Can you... Nice.
Thank you.
Can
I'm
you
trying to get involved.
That's good. That's good. Can you work with your friends to defend your castle against the Horde?
Work with me!
Or will monsters tear down your walls and destroy the precious castle towers? You will all win or lose together, but in the end, only one player will be declared the Master Slayer.
You're the Master Slayer.
Thank you, Cody. So this game is, like as Cody says, is a kind of a quasi-cooperative game in that you're going to be all working together to defend your castle from all of these bad guys. But at the end, whoever has collected the most points and killed the most bad guys will be declared the Master Slayer. In a way, this sort of has a similar element to Cutthroat Caverns, where, you know, the person with the most prestige points is going to win, but you still have to work together to defeat stuff. The only difference is that in Cutthroat Caverns, it's a lot more of a direct conflict game. Like, you're really playing cards to try to screw your neighbor at just the right time. Castle Panic is a lot more passive, I guess. It's, you know, there's some card play and trading you can do that might give you an advantage, but don't feel like this is a real confrontational game. Yeah. I would say that this plays just fine as a pure cooperative game playing against the game. It's nice and light and relatively quick too, which I think is a good thing. So anyway, the basics of the board on this game is that it's almost like a series of concentric circles, and in the middle you're going to have your castle. And there are these cardboard stands that will represent the towers of your castle. There's six of them. And then in front of those are going to be walls that are also cardboard that are on plastic stands that will be around your castle. And radiating out from there are going to be concentric circles that are different zones, I guess, that the bad guys are going to be slowly moving towards your castle. The idea is that they start out way back in the forest, and then they move into the archer phase, which is where archers can actually attack, then to the knight section, then to the swordsman section, and once they're there, then they can attack your walls and get inside to the castle. So you don't want that to happen. So in the game, you're going to be playing cards to fend off all of these bad guys, which will be able to attack and destroy certain bad guys depending on how strong they are. There are three main kinds of bad guys in the game. There's goblins, orcs, and trolls. The goblins have one hit point, the orcs have two, and the trolls have three. Then there's also some special characters like, you know, troll lords and orc kings or whatever that are going to have some special abilities and have more hit points. And one nice thing is that the tokens for the bad guys are these triangles. And so, for example, like a troll is going to have three hit points. And so on the points of the triangle, you'll see a one, a two, and a three. So, they're going to be facing inward towards the castle as they're moving. And then if you happen to deal a point of damage to the troll, you're going to rotate that piece so that the two is visible. So it becomes real easy to see, to kind of count down the life markers on all of the different bad guys. I think that's kind of a neat little mechanic that's thrown in there on the components. So there's going to be 49 monster tokens and different special effects that happen in the game. The little tokens themselves, these triangles, some of them are monsters and some of them are going to be just effects that you'll play that will cause bad things to happen during the game. You win the game if you're able to get through all 49 of these monster tokens without your castle being destroyed. And so that's the basic point of the game, and you're going to be using cards to do this. So the way you're going to sort of set the game up is you'll have the board set up in the middle. You're going to start off with six different bad guys, one in each zone. It's sort of divided up like a pizza or a pie or something. So you have these concentric circles, but then you're also going to have six like pie-shaped zones where things can start off, and they're numbered too. And so you'll actually start off by rolling a die to indicate where things are going to go. And so you'll start off with a certain number of bad guys that are on the outskirts there in the archer area that are going to be moving in towards. And so you're going to get a certain number of cards depending on the number of players you have. Like for two players, each person gets six cards. Three to five players, each person gets five. And for six players, each person gets four cards. And so you're going to be doing several things on your turn. And the player will go clockwise around the table. The first thing you'll do is draw up to a full hand of cards. So the very first turn, you're not going to do this. But you'll be drawing up to a full hand of cards based upon the hand size that I just mentioned. And then step two is you have the ability to discard and then draw one card. And so, you know, that way you can kind of swap out a card that you think might not be useful. Step three is that you can trade cards if you want to. And so you can trade for a 2-5 player game. You can trade one of your cards with one card from any other player. Now, the way we actually ended up playing this game was with open hands with the cards kind of sitting on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Just because unlike Shadows Over Camelot, which is a cooperative game where you have to be real vague about what you say, like, you know, I think I can help you with that quest. I might be able to offer assistance, you know.
Yeah.
There's really no incentive that we could see to having the cards in your hand. So you know, because you could see, it's like an open information sort of a thing.
Right.
So if anything, keeping the cards in your hand might keep from there being that one guy at the table who's the know-it-all, who wants to direct how everybody's going to do things. And keeping the cards in your hand might give you a little bit more control over that. But anyway, you can choose to make trades so that you can get yourself in the best position to attack at exactly the right time. After that trade cards phase, then you're going to actually play cards. You can play as many cards as you want from your hand that might be applicable to what you're doing. So, you know, for example, you have the concentric circles that I mentioned, which are the swordsman, knight, and archer rings around the castle. Then you also have three colored zones, like two of the pie pieces are blue, two are red, and two are green. And so based upon those colors and what concentric circle it is, you're going to have cards like swordsmen, knights, and archers that will affect certain areas. So if you have a bad guy that's in the red archer area and you have a red archer card, you can play that card to deal one damage to the bad guy that's in the red archer ring. And it works for the same way for all of the other zones and colors as well. So these are ways that you can destroy tokens and to, you know, deal damage to particular tokens. So you're going to want to do that as much as you can, because, you know, time is short, and at the end of your turn, more monsters are going to come onto the board. So you're going to want to try to play as much as you can. You can also do things like building walls. If, for example, a monster has come all the way into the middle and has taken out one of your walls, if you have a brick card and a mortar card, then you can play brick and mortar and build a new wall to replace the one that got destroyed. So that's pretty cool too. There's lots of other sort of special cards that are in the deck too that will positively affect things for you and your teammates. So I won't go into all the details of those, but lots of good things that you can play there. And like I said, you can play as many cards as you want on your turn. And you can choose to hold back cards for future turns or for trades. You can work all of that out with your fellow players. So then that's the step five is to play cards. No, I'm sorry. Step four is to play cards. Step five is then to move monsters. All of the monsters that are on the board are going to move one step closer if they're still alive. So, you know, once something's dead, you take it off and you'll actually keep the token if you have dealt the killing blow to the bad guy. But then everything's going to move in closer. And then at the very end, step six, you're going to draw two new monster tokens from the bag or pile that you've got there on the side of the board. And then you'll place them into particular areas. And so you're going to roll a die to see, you know, where that thing is going to end up. And so that's pretty much the whole turn. It's just those six steps, and you'll just kind of repeat this. So there's a lot of strategy. Like all cooperative games, it all comes down to timing. You know, when are you going to play certain cards to destroy certain things, and are you able to coordinate that in a way that's going to make it happen quickly enough where, you know, you're not going to get destroyed. You know, once a monster gets inside of your castle and tears down one of the walls, then it's going to travel clockwise around, and each turn it will destroy one of your castle towers until you know, all of them are destroyed. And once that sixth one is destroyed, you lose the game. So there's lots of things. There's even special cards, attack cards, that can only be played once the bad guy is inside of your castle within that phase there. So you know, lots of different options that you have there, and that's kind of how it works. I mean, it's real quick. I think the game would probably play in less than an hour.
Oh, definitely.
Far less than an hour. And I think it's got some real, real good stuff going for it. So, Cody, why don't you tell me what you thought of Castle Panic?
It was nice because, at least in my experience, you don't see a lot of short cooperative games. It seems like
Pandemic's like the only one I can think of.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's true.
But no, you're right. I think,
yeah, know, but you know, Fury of Dracula, BSG, Shadows Over Camelot, you know.
Yeah, not short games.
Yeah, not short games. So this was kind of refreshing because it's one, like John said, you could put on the table, play in less than an hour, and be done. I kind of wish they just would have made it a cooperative game. Like the whole Master Slayer thing, I think they just should have left that out, because I know when I played, it's like I was more concerned about that than the overall, you know, my attention was kind of divided. And I think with this game, this works very well as an all or nothing sort of deal. The master trader, or the master trader, the was it Master Hunter?
Master Slayer.
Master Slayer. I just don't think that adds enough the game for it to be included. So personally, I would house rule that and just take that out and make it a pure cooperative game. The only other thing that kind of bugged me about this one was the art. I think the art is not that great.
No?
No, I think it could have been better, and it was actually a little distracting for me. I just didn't think it was that great.
See, for me, I didn't have as much problem with the art. The art is very cartoony. I mean, it's very much like Saturday morning cartoon kind of art, you know, especially the heroes, you know, the big jaws.
And I'm not looking for dissent here, but it looked kind of slapdash to me. I wasn't real...
Slapdash?
Yeah.
Never heard that before.
Oh, well.
Okay. Well, that's apparently the way it looked. I didn't have as much problem with the art, but I do agree with you that the Master Slayer part of it seemed kind of unnecessary to me.
It was like they were trying to add an edginess to it. They're like, we're not going to have a traitor, but we're going to have one player will be the master. It's like, why? Just why can't a cooperative game be a cooperative game?
Yeah, I mean, because the game really is tricky enough. You know, there's a good chance you're going to win. I mean, but
it's tough.
It's tough. Game. Yeah, and there's even I didn't even mention that there's some of the tokens that you can get. One of the special tokens, the bad guy tokens, I guess, is not a orc or a troll, it's a giant boulder.
Yeah.
And you place that in a particular area and it rolls all the way through the board until it hits something. And so it could take out one of your walls or it could take out a whole bunch of people. And, you know, so that makes it interesting. And so it's going to be a difficult game anyway. And the Master Slayer part, you know, in Cutthroat Caverns, that's the point of the game, really.
Mm-hmm.
But in this game, just the cooperative part is hard enough. And you're right, it seems like that's kind of tacked on. They have some variations that you can do. There's just a pure pure co-op version. Then there's also something called the Overlord version, where one player becomes the Overlord and takes command of the monsters while the other players, you know, will be defending the castle.
Yeah.
And so the Overlord player would be moving monsters on their turn, and then they would actually have a hand of monsters and choose which things go onto the board. So that's kind of there. They're trying to make it sort of the cooperative versus one element too. So that might have been just a little overkill, I guess.
Yeah.
But overall, I think it's a pretty good little game as co-op games go. And Cody, what would you say? Castle Panic by Try or Deny?
It's going to be a try for me. I enjoyed it well enough when we played it. I would try it again. I just think I would sit down and play it and see if it's for you. It's got some redeeming elements. It's got some not so good stuff. So definitely sit down, give it a try, but it's nothing I would rush out and get. It's a solid try for me. So, John, what would you give Castle Panic? Buy, try, or deny?
I'm actually going to give it like a try plus plus.
Wow.
It's really almost a buy for me. This is, like I said, I don't remember what the retail price is, but this is, I think it's somewhere in the $30 to $35 range, which is less than you would pay for like a big box game that would be coming from, you know, Days of Wonder, Fantasy Flight, mm-hmm. something like that. And so for that, because it's a slightly less price, I maybe my expectations are a little bit less for it. And that's not to say, though, that it's not a good game, because I think it is a lot of fun. I personally really like pure cooperative games where people are working together, trying to you know, figure things out. I liked the artwork. I thought that it gave it a lightness to it where you didn't feel like you were – it didn't feel like Ghost Stories. You know, where Ghost Stories, you just feel like – you know, they can make that art as cartoony as you want, but you just feel like you're in this slog of, oh my gosh, we're going to die and this is terrible. I didn't feel that way playing this game. It felt lighthearted and fun. It's like, oh, I've got brick and mortar. I can build a wall, or, you know, I can, you know, use my square jawed swordsman to defeat this orc. And it just felt very, very, very fun to me. And so I really think you could have a lot of fun with this, especially almost as an intro or a gateway for cooperative games. Not that you necessarily need to have some big threshold. There's a big threshold of learning to get into a cooperative sort of game. But I would almost pick this game over Pandemic for me. Because it feels less mathy to me.
Yeah.
Pandemic feels like it's just basically a big puzzle, like a big math equation of you got to do this in this order and that order in this order and then you win. Whereas this game, I thought just thematically was a little bit more fun. And
I might agree with you there. I didn't care for Pandemic that much. So
yeah.
Okay. But I can agree with you there.
So I'll give it a try plus plus. It's not my favorite cooperative game, but I'll definitely give it a positive review. So go check it out.
So try plus plus plus.
A
try plus plus from John and just a vanilla try from me.
Bye bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye. Bye bye!
All right. As always, we want to remind you that Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. You can find our show and other great shows like us at pulpgamer.com.
Yeah, last episode you mentioned Smilin' Jack's Bar and Grill. Uh-huh. I think they've released the second episode of that show.
Go check it out.
Yeah, go check that out. Ron and Veronica Blessing do a great job with that one. Lots of other good stuff on the Pulp Gamer Media Network.
All right. And as we mentioned the show, if you'd like to get in contact with us, you can do so at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And you can also check out our website at gameonpodcast.com and subscribe to get the latest updates, get some of our written reviews, get our normal show updates. And most importantly, we have our donation button.
That's right. We want to mega emphasize that for this episode, that this is the Tom Vassell fundraiser, Tomic Relief.
Yeah.
And we're going to be doing this gigantic raffle of a whole huge, fabulous prize package of games. But even more importantly, we're helping Tom Vassell get those funds together so that he can make that relocation to wherever God's taking him next.
Right.
And so for every $5 you donate, you're going to get an entry into this great raffle. So donate early, donate often, donate a lot.
Right. And even if you've never listened to a single episode of the Dice Tower, all you have to do is put his name into Board Game Geek, and you'll see how much he's really put into this hobby. So.
Over 1,000 reviews on Board Game Geek, both and all video quality. And written, and all very quality. The guy is just an absolute encyclopedia of game knowledge, and just a heck of a nice guy. So we want to support Tom, and so please check out the Tom Vassell fundraiser. Click on that donation button and give some money to Tom.
And you could win.
You could. So join us in 2 weeks where we're going to be bringing our last show of 2009. We'll be looking back on all the great stuff that happened this year, the good and the bad and the ugly of gaming in 2009. So I'm excited about it.
I am too.
All right. Well, until then.
Go Colts and game on. All right, it's time for Buy, Try, or Deny, and we've got quite a panicked game for you to pick.
Really?
Oh, we got quite a panic.
This is really fun.
That was terrible.
Okay.